First this afternoon to the complex question of the divestment of some primary schools run by the religious orders but funded by the state and a transfer of those schools to secular patronage. For years now the government has been committed to doing this. The church says it's on board, so why is it happening so slowly? Well, there are a number of reasons, according to Professor John Coulihan, who was chairman of the government's forum on patronage and pluralism in the primary sector. I spoke to him last night and I asked him first if, on the basis of a relatively poor response to the forum's survey of parents' attitudes, he felt there really was a public demand for change.
I am. And the issue wasn't so much what everybody thought. The issue was to see, is there a minority of people here who have serious concerns about this? And that was what the referendum was, or the various opinion things were, to indicate. Just to check, it wasn't so much to take an overall plebiscite on the situation, but to find out, is there a meaningful minority here? Because obviously you can't have a school for everybody and anybody. We already have too many schools per head of population in comparison to other countries. So it was really a question of, can we actually establish that there is a minority of citizens here who are seeking, and they did that.
Right.
And I think myself, that's actually, to be honest, you underplayed in comparison to the public situation at the moment. I believe that this is a bigger issue than those opinion polls show up, and I think it's going to be bigger. And to some extent, the little pages bear that out too. There's also another issue that might be relevant, Richard, and it's this. You're probably aware that we've signed up a range of international conventions on these kind of areas, which are now becoming very... they're going to be causing a lot of troubles at government, because various subgroups, humanist groups, deities groups and other groups of parents, are well aware of how the international obligations are not being fulfilled, and they're moving that into the international arena. And international agencies are telling us we need to do something about this.
Well, let's talk about the political response, or the lack of it. This obviously is fraught with difficulties 6 months or less out from an election.
Correct. I agree with that. I'd be well aware of the kind of political temperature that operates. But it's 3 years ago, more than 3 years ago, since we produced that report. And as I say, it has been a live issue long, long before we produced our report. But there's a great sense of drift, and that is what I don't think is worthy of either the politicians or the church leaders, and to some extent even the teacher unions. I think the INTO and the IPPN, that's the Association of Principals and Deputy Principals, could in a general sense use their good offices too in contributing to the debate and encouraging people to think twice when the issue comes down to local level as to a way forward. Even if it means a bit of inconvenience in terms of your local school, they're only in towns, most of them, where there are five or six schools, so the gaps and the distances aren't huge. What's involved isn't a major thing for people's inconvenience, but it would mean a lot for their fellow citizens and a sense of civic responsibility to protect the rights of all citizens.
Are you disappointed with the poor political response?
Yes, but I can understand it. And you see, what some of the letter writers miss, this is an easy one, because, as I say, the constitutional and legal framework is very strong on this. It's repeatedly in the Constitution, it endorses the current system. And I don't see in the current climate any political appetite for changing that. And if that's not there, then the best way of going forward is to try to do it in the kind of way we talked about, of voluntary divesting, and also where there's what we call standalone schools, that they try to become more inclusive on lines we suggested. And
perhaps the political response would be greater if there was a visible campaign from the parents, and there doesn't seem to be one.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough point. The collected voice of the parents are subgroups in different areas who are very unhappy and so on and so forth. But I think you have a point there that, for instance, as far as I understand, while the National Parents Association went very much along with what we were suggesting in the forum report, I don't see any campaign or subset of the National Parents Association carrying out that. And I think you have a genuine point there. The politicians respond to public demand, and maybe they have sized up that the demand isn't strong enough for them to take on issues at local level. But I also think some local politicians have been irresponsible. Instead of actually encouraging good action forward, at times I think they have actually played a negative role.
Let's talk about the church's response. Archbishop Dermot Martin cut something of a lone figure on this issue. Has the response of the individual Catholic bishops, has it been one of disinterest, or does it amount to outright opposition, do you think?
I think it varies. I don't think there's any real outright opposition. And in fairness to the various bishops that I'd be aware of, they did engage and encourage discussions at local level about divesting. But it was at a distance to a large extent. It was left to local people. I don't think myself that they used their moral authority or their good offices or their position, and traditionally that has been pretty strong, to advocate and be proactive and encourage and say, we want this to happen. Please help us. This is an issue which we are backing. This is an issue which we think is in the interest of the church, which I think it is, in the longer run, and encourage that. And I think that that has been a pity. It's been a distant engagement, but not hostile, in fairness. And when you leave it open to the ground, very few groups of parents at local level, the majority will want the traditional thing, what they're used to, etc. Very few will jump up and put up their hands and say, please take our school.
For many parents, there is this fear of a leap into the unknown, that they like what they have, they may have some difficulty with in terms of a Catholic ethos, but they don't know what the alternative is.
But you see, in most cases, they will have alternatives, because all you're saying for it will take a town like Killarney here in Kerry, where you have five or six Catholic schools and where the discussions took place. There'll be one school, should we say, devolved to educate together or whoever. But the other schools continue as Catholic schools. If anything, they could maybe become more Catholic because they mightn't have to allow for the some others. So in other words, it's not as if the Catholic schools have been taken away out of a town. It's just that one would be devolved, and those who are Catholic parents then would maybe agree to, over time, send their children to the other Catholic schools. So it's not such a major change as it would be if you were, say, saying, well, we're going for a secular system in Killarney or Bushavent or wherever the case might be.
Well, you raised your point, the point yourself there, is that those schools that remain Catholic could become more Catholic and an alternative provided. And that, some people would say, is segregation. And that's not necessarily what society wants.
Yes, well, if you're working from a greenfield site, Richard, we wouldn't be having the system we have today, I can tell you. But all I'm pointing out, as I was saying earlier on there, that it's not a greenfield situation. The existing system that has been inherited has deep-rooted constitutional and legal supports for itself. So that that's a fact of life, and I think you're going to have Catholic schools, Church of Ireland schools, and so on Ireland for the foreseeable future. On the other hand, I'm just saying from the Catholic point of view, and Damon Martin made this point, that sometimes in accommodating inclusivity in scum schools, they feel that they can't have it as Catholic as they would wish it to be. Now, that's up to the authorities of the church, but I'm just saying that from their point of view, it might ease their situation if they devolve schools, that they could become somewhat more Catholic, although that might upset some other parents.
Is there, let's suppose this isn't going to happen within the next number of years, is there any way that the present system could be largely preserved but altered in such a way as to accommodate other religions and none?
Oh yes, definitely. And that's, we set out that in great detail in the forum report. We have about 56 guidelines and recommendations for the department as well as for the school administrations. And I think there's a great logical basis for moving forward. And I think Ireland could actually set a headline in this regard by being growing up and facing the facts and working intelligently and rationally so that the desires and needs of all citizens can be more or less accommodated. You'll never get it perfect.
Professor John Coulahan, Chairman of the Government's Forum on Patronage and Pluralism in the Primary Sector. Well, for the Church's take on this, I've been speaking to Father Michael Drum. He's Chairman of the Catholic Schools Partnership. I asked him about the level of commitment to change from the Church's patrons and indeed from the individual Catholic bishops. Firstly, did he accept that the Forum's survey had in fact established the need, the demand for some level of change?
I think what we learned from the survey, I think we've learned enough to work on. What we learned from the survey, first of all, is that patronage is not a major issue for a lot of parents, but that doesn't solve anything. It is an issue for a minority of parents, as Professor Coulahan said. For a lot of parents, we know from the surveys, and we know from previous work that we did, research of our own in the Catholic Schools Partnership, most parents are not preoccupied with the issue of patronage. A minority of parents are very concerned, and that's what we wanted to address. And what emerged from the survey, which I think we can trust, and is robustly demonstrated by the survey, is that somewhere between 2% of parents and 8% of parents with children in school in certain areas that were surveyed want and would avail of, if the opportunity was there, an alternative. Now, that's a low number of parents, but it's real, it's measurable and verifiable, and we accepted that. And that's what we've been working towards, to try and adapt the system to address the needs of a minority of parents who would avail of alternative patronage if it was available.
Do you think that there was a difficulty in that survey, or indeed in any survey, in that for some parents, what they were being asked to vote on was to maintain the status quo, which they were largely happy with, or to take a leap in the dark, that they weren't quite sure what the alternative was? And had they been informed, fully informed of what the alternative was, that they might be more inclined to look upon it favourably?
Yeah, I think there's a fair point that people's knowledge of what's available and what's not available. I think, though, in fairness, we would say, and I think Educate Together themselves would say, that their offering is pretty clear to people what it means. It has been well advertised. It's rolled out across the country. So I think a lot of people would know what it is. I think the ETBs, the Education and Training Boards, have a legitimate point over the years when they have said that their community national school, which is a very new model, is not understood by parents and wasn't really understood in the survey. So I think your point in that regard is correct, but I don't think we need to revisit the whole survey instrument for that purpose. I think we can work on the basis that there are a minority of parents who want change, and we should work towards that change.
Well, as you say, in some areas the need expressed was more clearly expressed than in others, and clearly in Dublin that need was expressed, particularly in some areas of Dublin, and yet even there the change hasn't taken place. Talk us briefly through what you think the obstacles are.
There's definite commitment on the part of church leadership to change. No one should have any doubt about this. I've been very involved in it, and there's been a lot of discussions with the department. There have been a lot of discussions on the ground. The problem we face is on the ground in particular areas. And I've mentioned this before, but I think we've got to a stage now where we really need to come up with something that unleashes this logjam. And that is, we need something to facilitate amalgamation. The best way forward in this process is not to transfer a living school from one patron to another, because that scares parents, it scares a lot of teachers, and it really gives rise to a lot of tension on the ground. What doesn't give rise to tension, and will work and has worked many times over the years, is where you amalgamate two or three schools, they come together and they literally cease to exist as three, they become one. And then you have buildings that become available that various things can be done with. But we need to help schools to jump into and accept amalgamation. What's happening on the ground at the moment is that where dioceses and church education leaders are proposing amalgamations, they're not being accepted. I think if we need further discussions maybe with the department, that some inducement needs to be given to school communities to actually participate in amalgamation. At the moment, if you amalgamate, any form of two grants that you have become one overnight. If we could provide some even very limited financial inducement to schools to amalgamate, because they would in this case be amalgamating for the purposes of pushing forward a national policy goal, which would be greater diversity in the locality, that would be very helpful. And I think we do need something. The blockages at the moment to amalgamation are unsatisfactory. We have a lot of small schools, let's say junior school and senior school, side by side, they could amalgamate. We have boys and single-sex schools where a lot of people might prefer co-gender, co-education. So we need something just to push this forward, and that could open up the possibility then of buildings being made available to other patrons.
Professor Coulihan identified a lack of political will. He also spoke about the teachers' unions and how they might be more proactive, and how parents too could get involved, or at least parents' representatives groups. And he also talked, as have others, about the somewhat patchy response of the Catholic Church, or individuals within the hierarchy, individual bishops, who are not quite acting as persuaders for this, or even explainers. That's led people to believe that they are opposed to this, that they are defenders of the status quo.
In my experience, that's not the case. There is a commitment on the part of church leadership. Where the difficulty has been arising is when the education representatives of the diocese attempt to move the issue forward locally, there can be a lot of antipathy. Now, of course, you can argue, and Professor Coulihan might well be right, maybe all of us need to use our good offices better in this regard. We actually need to go into communities. I did say this previously, that maybe we've had a lot of national conversations about this. Actually, maybe we should leave that aside for a while and have local conversations, that we should go into communities, politically, ecclesially, various leaders and people, to bring the communities with us in this regard. But so there's no doubt there has been antipathy all over the place, including from some politicians.
On the News of One this week, David Quinn of the Iona Institute made the point, and he's made it elsewhere, that divestment of some schools is good not just for the minority but for the majority, that it's better for the majority because it would allow the Catholic schools to be just that, or more so, fewer but purer. Would you agree with that? Is divestment inevitable? Will it definitely happen? If so, when? We've had different time frames. What in your view or in the view of your organisation, is a more realistic timetable? Are we talking 5 or 10 or 20 years or more?
I think a reconfiguration of the system is necessary and is to be welcomed. I think there's no doubt at all about that, even in response, let's say, to figures that emerge from the last census and from the upcoming one, I'm sure, in 2016. I don't think exact timelines matter too much. I think we need a good start. We haven't made the headway we anticipated over the last few years. I think we will make significant headway over the next few years, provided we come up with some way of really encouraging local schools to amalgamate in the areas that matter.
But if you don't have a timetable, surely the thing can just simply amble on for another 25 years, as Professor Coolin has pointed out. It's been around for that long.
No, I agree, not at all. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that it needs to be incremental, it needs to be ongoing. We shouldn't set a terminus which we're going to reach where definitively X number of schools are transferred, because if we don't reach that, that then becomes a big problem. I think what we need is a rolling system whereby amalgamations of schools in certain localities provide opportunity for change, and that will be ongoing. That won't cease.
And that begins, you would say, in the Dublin area, with greater engagement of the various interest groups, and then this question of inducements, financial inducements.
I think these things go together.
Could you spell out the notion of those inducements and financial inducements? What are we talking about?
We're talking about very little. It wouldn't even be noticed in the overall education budget. The amount of money, a lot of people mightn't realise, we're not involved in boards or parents' associations. Irish schools operate from hand to mouth, particularly primary schools, when it comes to finance. They basically have no money. They have no savings. They simply get in a certain amount of money from capitation and any fundraising that you do during the year. It all goes on ordinary expenditure. If they lose any small grants, and there are small grants provided for caretaking, for secretarial assistance, they're lost in amalgamation. Two of everything becomes one of everything. We need these to survive the amalgamation, and we might even need other simple inducements. Believe you me, this would make a bigger difference than people imagine, because the operation of these schools financially is on a very simple basis, and they are under great duress.
And that was Father Michael Drum, chairman of the Catholic Schools Partnership. Apologies for the editing glitch there, which meant that one of Father Drum's questions, or his answers rather, was not in the final edit of that interview. Apologies for that.